If I am bored with my life, that means a part of me is asleep. A part of my gifts or interests or passions are dormant. When you're in tune with who you are and what you carry and what makes you come alive, that's not boring.
From To Be Magnetic, this is the Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As the leading destination for neural manifestation, we dispel the woo-woo in order to help you create real, tangible results based on neuroplasticity, psychology, epigenetics, and energetics. Our goal is to normalize the practice of manifestation and empower you to get into the driver's seat of your life in order to manifest the experiences, relationships, and things that most align with your authenticity. Part of our manifestation process entails expanding past your limiting subconscious beliefs. Therefore, by tuning into this podcast with interviews from experts, thought leaders, spiritual teachers, scientists, and those with neural manifestation success stories, you're starting the process of expanding your subconscious in order to see to believe that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, the process begins.
Welcome back to another episode of Expanded. I am so excited for today's guest. She is just such a powerful presence when it comes to healing and recovery and authenticity and finding your joy. You probably follow her on Instagram at Dr. Tama. So today's guest is Dr. Tama Bryant. She is a clinical psychologist, president-elect of the American Psychology Association, a professor of psychology at Pepperdine University, and ordained minister in the African Methodist Episcopal Church. She has earned her doctorate from Duke University and completed her postdoctoral training at Harvard Medical School. She has over 20 years' experience in trauma recovery and has appeared as a mental health expert on TV, radio, and all media. She also has an incredible new book out called Overcome Fear and Trauma to Reclaim Your Whole Authentic Self, Homecoming. Her book was so powerful. Her message is so powerful. And what I really love about Dr. Tama is she takes these very heavy and intense topics such as trauma healing, people suffering from sexual assault, oppression, war, abuse, neglect, and is able to recontextualize it in a way that along your healing journey, you are in path of connecting to your authentic whole worthy self, and that there is so much joy and beautifulness of pulling back the layers, which is everything that we believe here at To Be Magnetic as well. We really cover in this book understanding what an authentic self is and what it means, and how when we unravel the truth of our past and what we have gone through and who we are truly at our source, that we can start to allow a space for our authenticity to come out and be prevalent, and how a lot of reconnecting with our authenticity. Obviously, with TBM, we believe there's a lot of reprogramming in the mental and neural pathways. But then the next piece is that action. And so Dr. Tama really touches on how to be intentional and actionable with how you show up in the world and who you want to be as it aligns to your authenticity. She also talks about people pleasing, how boredom truly means that we are living beneath our potential and self-sabotaging, limiting ourselves. How being busy does not mean that we are healed. Tips for reparenting. And really digging into this idea that we can look at our triggers in life and go back to their roots, uproot them, recontextualize them, and start presenting differently in real time. She also gives some incredible tips on healing somatically in your body and calming your nervous system, because that is something that comes up a lot when we're facing triggers in real time. I know you guys are going to love this episode, and I highly, highly recommend her book. It breaks down various stages of reconnecting with our authenticity, the importance of how we can start to look at that and peel back the layers. And you also get to hear a bit about her own personal struggles and journey, which is so powerful to see her not only healed through those traumatic experiences, but is thriving on the other side. I know you guys are absolutely going to fall in love with her if you haven't already. And we hope you have a very magnetic week. Enjoy.
And now a word from our partners. So I have a funny mini manifestation story for you. You've heard Jessica and I both talking about Blue Blocks. What a beautiful story that we came to partner together. Within that, this is actually really cute because I'm one of those bedside readers. I love to read before bed to help me just really sink into quiet, calm, relaxed, and ready for sleep. However, I'm crazy. Speaking of Blue Blocks, you can listen to the two episodes I have with founder Andy Mant, where we talk about why I don't have any lights on in the bedroom in the evening. I only have candlelight. And so to read, it's really, really hard in the candlelight. So I've been Googling actually for months and months incandescent reading lamp, like a book reading lamp, the ones that you can clip to your book and read with, and nothing comes up. And I'm like, why has somebody not invented this during this time? And then totally out of nowhere, founder Andy Mant shipped me one of their new products, which is their Lumi Clip Sleep Plus, which is exactly that. It's a rechargeable 100% blue and green light free little book clip light that houses their Sleep Plus technology. So not only does this allow me to read perfectly fine now, but it also doesn't provide any sleep disrupting blue and green light. It's flicker free, zero EMF. And on top of it all, it gives off a warm and relaxing campfire feel, just like the candle that's burning by my bedside. And so now I can actually read by the bedside. And literally when I opened this up, completely unexpected, didn't know it was coming to me, didn't know they had invented this. I opened it and I was like, ah, thank you, universe. So this is a total mini manifestation. And I wanted to share that with you. It's only a $29 product. So if you're anything like me and you're a candle lighter, you would probably be lit up about that. And the really cool thing from Blue Blocks now is that they have the Lumi Lamp Sleep Plus. So for any of us who have become a cult following of the Lumi Lamp Clip Plus, now it's an actual lamp that sits on your nightside table. And the coolest thing is that it's under $60. So go ahead and check out www.blueblocks.com/pages/magnetic. The discount of 15% will automatically be added to your order, or use the code all caps magnetic, MAGNETIC, for 15% off your order. So things have gotten pretty hippie in Topanga. Back when I lived in Echo Park, I had a pretty decent edible garden. But Teddy has re-inspired me to go to the ninth degree. So we have a massive garden structure that we built to plant our biodynamic garden. And we are seeding with the new moon and, you know, harvesting with the full moon. And my beets are already coming up. My beans are coming up. My chard's coming up. Kale, I'm planting in succession. All of this to say that I really, really have the goal to set Teddy's foundation of her microbiome to be as powerful as it can be within my control of the toxicity that we live in today's age. That's why I've been really committed and privileged enough to breastfeed her through all of the challenges that I've gone through, which have been many, and you've heard about it on this podcast. It's also why I began taking seed probiotic. As you know from hearing me talk about them before, that our marketing director, Grace, introduced us to seed. She's been taking it for ages. She's seen profound results. So when it came time to enrich my milk and help with Teddy's gas, I was like, I've got to get on a probiotic via my doulas. And seed was obviously the gold standard to turn to because it is just that. It's the gold standard within the probiotic world. Things that I really appreciate about seed is that it has 100% survival rate, meaning that it absolutely gets down to your gut to colonize it, whereas competitors have about a 20% survival rate. Their advisory board is chock with some of the most profound scientists Dr. Gregory Reid being one of them. He's actually the chief scientist that coined the word probiotic. So safe to say everybody at TBM is using Seed Probiotics and their monthly subscription. We're incredibly proud of it. We are beyond proud to be partnered with them. If you are interested in trying their probiotic, you'll receive 15% off the first month by going to the link below, and that's at seed.com, and using the code CAPSTBM and the number 15. Again, that's TBM15. All right, on to the episode.
I am so excited for today's guest. We have Dr. Tama Bryant. Welcome. How are you doing?
Oh, thank you so much. I'm doing well and excited for this conversation with you and just in a real place of gratitude.
I've been following you for so long and listening to Homecoming, the podcast, and just had the opportunity to finish reading Homecoming, your latest book. So it is such an honor. I feel like I really deeply resonate with your words and even like the energy of your delivery. I was thinking about this before recording, but there's something about the way that you talk about such kind of heavy or scary topics in a way that feels like a warm hug. It feels like, oh yes, this is what it's all about. It's safe to explore this or think about this or move to this space. So you're so excellent at that.
I appreciate you saying that because I think often these difficult topics people shy away from because their experience or expectation, you know, it's just that it's going to be horrible and leave you in a terrible place. And so I think it is so important to approach it with care, but to still approach, right, to still speak about it, but just being mindful of doing it at a pace and at a tone and in such a way where people can stay with it.
And even in the book, you share a lot of different stories and examples of clients you've worked with and had as well. And I think what's interesting about those stories and hearing about it is like there can be pain and shame and so much heaviness in that. And by the end of the story, there's hope. Mm-hmm. And I think that's that piece that, you know, everyone needs to feel that sense of hope for something more, something better, something integrated, which is really beautiful.
Yes, for it not to be an ending, even when there are endings like ending of relationship or the ending of a job or the death of a loved one, to be able to sit with that, acknowledge it, and then also open ourselves to new beginnings in whatever form that might take.
Absolutely. So one question we love to kick off with here is, what is your cultural background and upbringing, and how has that shaped who you are today?
Yes, beautiful. So I'm a woman of African descent. I'm African American, and that is integral to who I am. Actually, my parents, who are both Black Americans, selected African names for us. So the name Tama means queen. And then my middle name is Simone, after the incredible singer Nina Simone. And so my culture and my heritage is in my name, and thinking about kind of ancestral inheritance, that I was raised with a sense of community, that it's not just about me or just about materialism or, you know, seeking status, but really the importance of giving and sharing and connecting. And I'll say that not only comes from my cultural heritage, but my faith background. I grew up as a pastor's daughter. And so, you know, in our tradition in the Black church, church wasn't just some place where you go on Sunday morning, but throughout the week, it really was a community center. So we had jobs training, we had a GED program, we had a women's center, we had, you know, cultural fairs. And so really growing up with this sense of connection and the importance of giving back and empowerment.
I love that. I think community is one of those aspects of healing that people don't talk about a lot. Or, you know, we always think of healing as like this thing that we do in our bed journaling or on a therapist's couch. And definitely that's part of it. But there's another sense of healing with a community, to be seen and validated by others, to share in your spirit or your culture. You know, talk a bit about that and the necessity for the community.
Yes, thank you so much for raising that. So, you know, one of the terms for your audience to know is decolonizing psychology. So when we decolonize it, it's one, paying attention to context, the socio-political context in which we live and how oppression has affected us, but it is also highlighting cultural or indigenous ways of healing. And, you know, one of the ways that most cultures utilize is healing in community. And so there was a powerful story that was told, I believe, in Rwanda, that U.S.-based psychologists came over and claimed they were going to help them. And one of the community leaders reported, you know, these people said they were going to help us heal, so we let them in. And they did not have any music. They did not have any dancing. And they separated us and took us into these dark little rooms and wanted us to tell all of the terrible things about our lives. And that was not healing. So we had to ask them to leave.
Oh,
and I just think that, right, is so powerful. Yeah. It's like, how are you going to make us feel better? You have no music. So there is healing that takes place in community. And even as a therapist, I'll say, and I do individual therapy, but I also do group therapy. And it is a different energy that can happen in group or even in family therapy or couples therapy, being able to connect with other people. Many of us carry so much shame. And so it can help to break it when I tell my truth to like one individual therapist. And it can break it on another level when I reveal myself, when I share my truth in a larger space or with more people and have it accepted and experience that it wasn't the end of the world for them to know that about me. So it really is a beautiful thing for us to have that community connection. And sometimes we can receive truth on another level when it comes from a member of your community. Sometimes as therapists, I may, you know, say something encouraging to a client, and some clients may feel like, oh, well, like you have to say that, right? You're my therapist. Like you have to like me. But it hits on another level when someone who's a part of their circle responds with that support.
Yeah, I think community, it's interesting. It's one of the things I have sort of in my mind for this year is like connecting deeper with community. What does that look like? How can I do that? Where do I seek those places? Where's sort of a first step you point people when they're like, you know what? I do need community in my life. I need to feel connected to people on a bigger level. Is it like looking up local things that are going on? Like, how do you instruct people to kind of seek out that community?
Yeah, so there are so many different types. So you can first brainstorm about what you want to connect around. So if you're wanting connection around your mental health, there are organizations like NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness, that has peer-led support groups that are free. And so, you know, then I can connect with people who are also dealing with their mental health. If you're politically minded, then getting involved in like a community group or a political organization. I'm someone who loves the arts. And so, you know, now things are opening up a little better. So like seeing if there are those spoken word coffee houses where I can go and whether I choose to share or not, just be around people who like love words and love poetry. Sometimes, you know, people will think about taking a class, like a low stress class, but just something they want to learn about. That kind of structure can be helpful for people who have some social anxiety, because in some of the other more informal places, they might feel kind of a pressure or how do I may show up, but then I don't speak to anybody. So if it's something that's more structured or facilitated, that may be more comfortable for others. So, and then of course, connecting either around your cultural community or around your faith community are other possibilities.
Love that. So helpful. And we'll link all of the things that you mentioned as well in the show notes. And so the theme of your book is about authenticity, homecoming to yourself, coming home to yourself, really connecting with that soul essence of who we truly are. And that's something we talk about here at To Be Magnetic all the time is authenticity, what it means to connect to that essence of who we are without the pain, shame, programming. So how would you describe your authentic self? It's such a powerful word and all encapsulating, but how do you describe that?
So to be authentic is to first tell myself the truth and then to live based on that truth that I have told myself.
That second half is so vital because people can sort of visualize their authentic truth. You know, okay, what would I be like if I didn't do this or that, or this didn't happen, or it did happen and I was able to heal and move on from it. And okay. Got it. I have this idea of a person that I want to move towards being, but it's how you speak, act, interact, show up in the world to embody that.
Yes, that's it, the embodiment. And so sometimes we have these wake-up moments where you realize, you know, I've been shrinking, I've been hiding, I've been pretending to either agree with everyone else, or I've been imitating, I've been being somebody else's authentic self in place of developing my own. And when we have that acknowledgement, it's not to get to a place of judgment or condemnation toward ourselves, but recognizing, like, when and why did I start pretending? That for some people, they kind of learned early that people don't like artsy people or people don't like spirit people. And so, like, how do I have to show up to get people's approval? And then getting to a place of, is it worth it for them to approve of my performance when that is not actually me? So now I, you know, enter the season in my life where I'm willing to risk the rejection of authenticity. That I'm going to be me and not everybody is going to like that. So we have to heal our people pleasing and approval seeking, and not in that harsh way of like, I don't care about people, but I believe in the value and importance of authentic connection. And we can't have a real friendship if one of us has to pretend.
I think it's so hard to push up against that. I know I can see people want this of me. I am not that. Okay, let me morph because I'll be safe. I'll be protected. I'll be part of the group. I won't be pushed out or cast aside. And I think we're just, our nervous systems are so afraid of that disconnection. It's so scary to be seen for who we truly are, knowing that it might not be what someone else wants.
Yeah. And to know, you know, that it makes sense that we do that in friendship. It makes sense that people do that in dating. And at the same time, to know it's not sustainable. The performance is not sustainable. And so you will leak out. And then how will they respond to that? And even if you're able to keep it up for a long time, the resentment grows and the fatigue grows, because you're doing a lot of emotional labor to silence yourself.
Ooh. And you said in the book too, you know, like there are signs of that disconnection from authentic self. It can present in depression, anxiety, non-compassion towards yourself and others, stuck in anger, hypervigilance, disassociation. Talk a little bit about some of those ways that the repressed authentic self leaks out when we're hiding it.
So important, because sometimes we don't even realize it within ourselves. Like I said, there can be those moments of a wake-up call of like, I miss me. This is not who I want to be or how I want to be. But there are other times in our lives where, you know, you may think, oh, it's, you know, pretty normal, or I'm just kind of going through the motions of living. And so to do a check of like, am I really present? Is this really me? Am I in flow, or am I forcing myself to be something else or be someone else? And so, you know, one of those signs is getting in that place of despair, of feeling the hopelessness and powerlessness and losing pleasure or enjoyment in anything. Because while initially you may be energized of like, oh, you know, I have these people's approval or attention, you know, one of the things we will discover is it is impossible to please everyone all the time, even when you're pretending. So it's like you went through all of that and still got rejected and still got abandoned, or people still talked mean about you, even though in your experience, you didn't do anything, right? I didn't do anything and I tried to be nice and, you know, they still organized against me. So that can be very disorienting and frustrating. And it also, if I'm living inauthentically, then it creates anxiety because it's the fear of, will I be found out? Because you'll feel like a fraud. And so am I getting it right? Am I dressing right? Am I saying it right? Am I enough? So that perpetual anxiety. And then, you know, that sense of numbness. So sometimes we don't recognize it in ourselves, but we have all at some point interacted with someone where you were clear they were physically present, but emotionally absent. And so the reality is sometimes that has been us, where the eyes are really dead. So you're sitting there, but you're not there. So that numbness can be an alarm for you of like, I don't want to just go in survival mode of like, let me just get through the day, get through the week, get through the month. And we can do that for years, yet really want to come alive. And Dr. Maya Angelou had this line, surviving is necessary, but thriving is elegant. And so it is important for us to survive, but we also have a longing for something more than that, to have an abundant, authentic life.
I think when people are in those moments of disconnection from self, disconnection from their authenticity, they feel it, even if they don't consciously know, it's leaking out in different ways. There's that longing, that hope that, wow, I feel like there's something more, and not more in the sense of items or things, but more in the sense of spiritual moreness.
Yes, there is that longing for the more. And, you know, another statement I share in there is, you know, you're too gifted to be bored. So if I am bored with my life, that means a part of me is asleep. A part of my gifts or interests or passions are dormant. And so, you know, because when you're in tune with who you are and what you carry and what makes you come alive, that's not boring. So if you find yourself in a vision desert, no ideas, no possibilities, than to consider what part of myself has been put to sleep.
It's interesting because I've heard friends or people say, oh, it's so boring right now, nothing to do, nothing to do. And it's that disconnection speaking. It's not your circumstance. You don't need more money in this moment. I mean, you might for survival, but not for fun necessarily. You don't need more things or outside pieces. It's like, where are you abandoning your soul? Where are you abandoning your spirit?
Yes, that self-abandonment, self-erasure, though, you know, that's what we give up to be inauthentic under the guise of acceptance. And I teach at Pepperdine University and I tell our students, if you make it to graduation but had to leave yourself behind, it wasn't worth it. If you are able to land the job you want, land the partner you want, and you're no longer you, it costs you too much.
That kind of parlays into this next piece of busyness and how we mistake busyness or even outward success as being healed.
Yes. Yeah. So important because it can trick other people and it can also trick us, you know, and we live in a culture that puts a lot of emphasis on productivity, on labor, working, working, working. And, you know, especially in the pandemic, then suddenly it was like, well, people know you're home if you're, you know, at home. So this constant access of people not knowing like when to log off, right? That or when to not take the call. So no boundaries. And people get praised for being workaholics. They can get rewarded for that, which encourages self-erasure, which encourages self-neglect. And so you can have an incredible resume, very impressive, full of accomplishments, and feel empty inside. And so to really set the intention with yourself, I don't want merely the appearance of success. I want to be at home within myself. I want to be fulfilled within myself. I want to actually know I'm already enough, because sometimes what is driving that is this feeling of unworthiness that can come from a history of abandonment or trauma. And so this feeling of like perpetually needing to prove myself, and that can create a perfectionism and the sense that like nothing is ever enough. So even if you accomplish something or you get something, you don't really celebrate it. You don't enjoy it. Now your mind's immediately going to like, what's the next thing? What's the next? What's the next? We also stay busy to avoid thinking about the things that we actually need to heal. So it's avoidance. So if I work nonstop, or when I'm not working, I have to have the television on while I'm on the phone, while I'm playing a podcast, while I'm doing a million things, because the silence may feel impossible. In the silence, you may think about some things you don't want to think about, but running and busyness are not the same thing as being healed. And so we really want to be able to face our own pain. We want to be able to face our own memories so that they don't continue to run us, but that we have power to be able to hold it.
And I think that's that big piece, which is if we do not look at it, it is still impacting us.
Mm-hmm. And that's an important point, because many people don't connect the dots. And they'll say like, oh, I'm over it. Or that happened a long time ago. It doesn't bother me. I just put it in a box and, you know, I don't think about it. I don't talk about it. But as we said before, it leaks out. It shows up in the ways that we parent. It shows up in the ways that we partner. It shows up in the ways we treat ourselves. It shows up even when it is beyond our awareness.
So I'm quickly interrupting this episode to invite you, if you're ready to start your manifestation journey, or if anything you've heard in our manifestation episodes has piqued your interest, to begin. We have a la carte workshops in everything from the basics bundle, which is what we recommend to everyone who starts. It's the formula that actually teaches you how to manifest, unblocked inner child, and unblocked shadow. We also have a la carte workshops on love and money. But the real gem is the Pathway membership, because it encompasses every single workshop we have. It's a year-long membership with full access to the few a la carte offerings we have and exclusive workshops not available anywhere else, such as the daily practice, which is what everybody in the Pathway uses, hopefully at least 3 times a week to daily, in order to truly create the new neural pathways that one needs in order to manifest, and houses the library of our deep imaginings, which is our unique hypnosis process that allows you to get into your subconscious and overwrite those old neural pathways, creating the new ones. You can use our special code EXPANDED, all caps, EXPANDED, to receive $20 off your first a la carte workshop purchase or $20 off your first month of the Pathway. Again, that's all caps, EXPANDED, EXPANDED. Okay, now back to the episode.
Talk a bit about the reparenting process and going back to our inner child versions and kind of seeing through the lens of their eyes and what they witnessed and what they actually needed but likely didn't get. And one thing in specific, the role of accountability from parents, because a lot of times people will, one of the biggest things is they just want their parent to say, you know what, I didn't do a good job, I'm sorry, or I messed this up, I'm sorry. How do we come to terms with that not happening in real life?
So important. And so because we're parented by people and human beings, it is imperfect. And so there's a range of, you know, how severe that is. But even those who feel like overall they had very caring parents are usually able to still identify sometimes or some categories in which things could have been done better or could have better prepared you for life or to connect you to yourself. And so given that, we're aware that for some people, they stay stuck in that resentment of the past or the resentment of what they didn't get, or feeling like they are permanently damaged, because they'll say, you know, well, my foundation is off. And so since the foundation was off, that's it for me. And, you know, while it is not an easy road, it is possible to recognize the ways in which there are some aspects of parenting that I did not get because of the guardians or parents that I had. So now I want to, from a place of empowerment, think about the ways I can give those things to myself. When we put our lives on hold, waiting for an apology, then we are disserving ourselves. It would be wonderful for people to admit when they've messed up, and yet it is not something we can make people do. And so to not put my life on hold, making my ability to have a fulfilling life dependent on the very people who hurt me or harmed me is really becoming now self-sabotage, right? That I can't move on until they say sorry. So for us to grieve what we did not get, or to even have anger about the mistreatment, may have sadness and grief about it, about, you know, what your child self was exposed to or did not receive. And it is unfair, because you'll see other people that you know who had a different journey. And so it is important to not skip over that and to acknowledge it. And then to say, what do I want to do now going forward? So, you know, there are different things that healthy parents do that I now want to do for myself. And so one of those examples is just around our care. So parents who are healthy and have, you know, the resource access would say, you know, to a child, you can't just eat candy and cake, right? Or you can't just live out of vending machines and drive-through windows. And so looking at, what am I feeding myself? Am I just letting myself drink soda and coffee, right? So to parent myself is to say, that's enough of that, and I'm going to drink water. A healthy present parent will set a bedtime and not have like a 7-year-old up at 2 a.m. So for me to say to myself, I need to create a sleep regimen. My sleep hygiene is important. I'm deserving of rest, and I'm not going to just either sit on the couch with the TV watching me, or like work until I fall asleep with a computer in my lap, but to say I'm deserving of rest and of care. So the different ways we can nourish ourselves is a part of reparenting.
I love that they're so actionable.
Yes.
You know, a lot of times reparenting and inner child work that we do is subconscious and in kind of a meditative state. But then taking that into the real world and saying, okay, I wanted those things. I didn't get them. If I was integrated or had that support, how do I start acting from that place now?
Yes. And the practical piece is so important. That's why at the end of each chapter are the homework assignments, because I don't want people to just read it and say, oh, interesting book, but for us to think about ways to apply it.
Absolutely. I think that's where that massive change, that shift happens. It's like the awareness of it, the feeling of it, and then the action. Talk a little bit about anger. And you talk about in the book scaling anger events. What is that? You know, our anger comes up a lot of times when we haven't had space to have anger, or we're recognizing that, you know, this thing that I swept under the rug was actually really painful. And now I'm finding my voice and I'm able to stand in my authentic self and stand up for myself. But sometimes it can come out, you know, as an overcorrection or an attack in anger. So how do we start to balance that emotion?
So first, to release judgment, if you grew up in a household where it was not okay to be angry, you know, the anger is, you know, a human emotion. And what I like to say is it's healthy to be outraged about outrageous things. So some things people have experienced or some things you see in the world are outrageous. It's not that I have to like feel nothing, you know, when people just highlight this disengagement where, you know, I'm neutral and nothing bothers me and I don't care about anything. But to be a compassionate person, to be a caring person means that when things that are done that are harmful, you know, that you have feelings about that. So it then just becomes, what do I do with those feelings? So we talk about constructive anger versus destructive anger, because for some people, anger, frustration, outrage is what motivates them to be a change agent. When I was living on the East Coast, there was a campaign about sexual assault, and they had billboards around the New Jersey area, and the billboard said, "We should be outraged." And it was trying to motivate people to be a part of, you know, the movement to stop a sexual assault. And so, you know, the things that you're upset about, what do you want to do about that? What is possible to do about that? And then I would say, taking care of your humanity is making sure that I still give myself access to a range of emotions. I think what happens for some people is the anger takes over everything else. And so now everything is suppressed. And it's not sustainable to just live with rage. So I'm upset about these things. And are there any areas of your life that you have joy about, that you delight in? Is there anything you're excited about? Are there any ways in which you feel love? So to open ourselves to that. And then back to the anger, when you were talking about the scaling, you know, I give clients who have challenges in this area this exercise to develop the skill of being able to rate an offense, because for some people, it's 0 or 10. And that causes, you know, our nervous systems are not built for us to constantly be at that state of level 10. And so, you know, if my response to someone cutting in front of me in line is the same as, you know, someone actually assaulting me, then I'm having difficulty with scale. And for some people, it's, you know, it's definitely learning. For some, if we just bring it to their awareness, they can start scaling immediately. And some people really don't get it that these different things are not equal. And so really having to slow down. And a part of what that could be is where people grew up. I've had clients who have shared that in their community, you had to respond at level 10 because then nobody else would bother you. So if people think I'll go off to the max, right, then I'm safer. So to be able to then differentiate, okay, that was that neighborhood you grew up in, and now you're 30 years old and you're working in this office. So it's a different culture, a different climate. And if you do that in this space, you're going to lose your job. So it becomes like an orientation.
I think that's such a really powerful way to look at it. And it's not saying don't feel anger. And it's not saying you have the right to blow up on every single person that has any perceived slight towards you. It's one of those emotions that, like you said, are an empowering emotion because it requires you to look at what action needs to be taken from the anger. And it doesn't have to be an angry action, you know, it could just be, I need to remove myself from this space or cut off this person or set a boundary or whatever it may be.
Yeah, it's so important that we get to that space, you know, and it can be a new skill. Also, you know, talking to people about what was modeled before them, that a lot of us either saw parents who never said anything to anybody and often got taken advantage of, or parents who modeled being really volatile or hostile. And then some people are afraid of any anger because it was not only about creating space for my own anger, but also creating space for other people's anger. So if people grew up in a circumstance where anger meant violence, then when other people are upset, it's like they can't tolerate it. where they become very fearful or panicky because their association is, oh, you're angry, then you're going to hurt me. Whereas the person may really just be saying, I'm mad that you did whatever you did. So developing the skill set so we don't overgeneralize based on our limited experiences to know that there are other ways of relating, there are other ways of disagreeing, there are other ways of expressing than we may be used to.
I think one thing in the trauma, you know, healing aspect of this is our nervous systems need to really be reset and sort of have this space of, okay, can we tolerate it in this without going into shutdown mode or fight or flight mode? What are some of the sort of practical ways, and you share a lot of these in the book, but like, what are some of those ways of expression or healing or movement that we can start to calm that nervous system or support it more?
Absolutely. So taking breath, and I like to talk about it as sacred pause so that we're not so reactive. So giving ourselves time to center and breathe, not just in the moment of tension, but throughout the day when you're a trauma survivor, you may find yourself holding your breath or breathing in a very shallow way. And so giving myself space to like slow down and really breathe. Interestingly, humming helps to calm the nervous system. Rocking also helps to calm the nervous system. And so, you know, psychology is kind of late to the party. They, you know, have discovered with studies about humming and rocking, but many of our cultural traditions have been doing that for generations. And I would also say, check your circle, meaning who do you spend time with? Some of us have difficulty getting to a safe, calm place because we're not around safe, calm people. So am I in relationship with people who are good for my nervous system? That's an important check. And if not, you know, I need to examine that and may need to make some decisions around that. And then there are, you know, some compassion holds. And so placing one hand over your heart, one hand on your belly, as you just center into your breathing, can be a beautiful way to calm your nervous system. Drinking water, putting cold washcloth on your face can also be great ways of calming ourselves.
I love those. So, so helpful. One other piece you touch on in the book, which I think is so powerful and important and needed, is how people of marginalized communities can kind of start to peel back some of the pain, and especially when they are still facing oppression, you know, racist encounters, whatever's happening in their society. What are some tips or insight or ways that people, you know, who are listening to the podcast who identify with those communities can start to approach their healing work? One quote that really stuck out to me from the book was, internalized oppression is when you come to believe the lies you've been told about yourself.
Yes. And that is so important to recognize and to heal it, because we can just take those things as truth, because throughout our lives, we've been bombarded with these messages. So, you know, I hear it if I'm thinking about women and sexism, when I hear women say things like, I don't like to make friends with women because women are petty and competitive. And I'm like, ah, so women are petty and competitive and men are collaborative and deep, right? It's like, is that really? Is that the truth? And so sometimes people just say things as fact that are really just based on stereotype, even of the group that they're in. I remember working with a Black adolescent girl, and she was talking about, you know, Black kids don't know how to act. And I said, where are you getting that from? Now, at her school, all of the behavioral challenge classrooms were filled with Black kids. And of course, not looking at what are the disparities that happen when we look at subjective discipline of what kid gets told to, you know, have a seat and lower your voice, and what kid gets sent to the principal office, or what kid is now labeled in this way. And so needing to disrupt those ideas, not only about our capacity, but even around beauty. You know, a lot of people really struggle with body image, and we have been presented with billboards and magazines and television shows and films that often present very narrow ideas about what is beautiful. And then, you know, who benefits all of these companies that convince us we need their products. So to be able to recognize what are the lies I have come to believe about my own community, whether I think I'm included in that or whether I think I'm the exception, and to begin to think about culture as medicine, that it is beneficial to learn about my cultural heritage, not just about racism. So yes, oppression exists, stereotypes exist, and it's not just that I want to try not to believe the stereotype, but I want to come into clarity about who I actually am, right? The things that were I was not taught in most, you know, school settings. Often, you know, when it comes to Black history, people learned very briefly slavery and then Dr. King. And like, and here we are. There's so much more. And so to know the gift of that, you know, that there is wisdom in your cultural heritage. So I like to say, we don't just have ancestral wounds, but we have ancestral wisdom. And so to learn the wisdom.
Yes. I think that's such an important piece because it's disrupting the lies that you've been told to believe about yourself, the rejection of self, the rejection of belonging. All of that you have to question, push back on, really just say, I'm not taking in whatever this person is trying to put on me because I believe it is not true. And then it is then celebrating and doubling down on your authentic expression, your cultural expression, because that is really going to shift how you and others around you are viewing yourself.
That's right. Yeah. To show up as yourself and know, you know, that you're deserving.
How do you guide, you know, I think if the root of a lot of these limiting beliefs is I'm not enough, I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy, I'm not special, all of those things. It's really that I'm not enough root. How do we begin to push against that? Because I think in the beginning, you're like, okay, instead, I'm going to believe I am enough. Well, I don't feel that right now. So where do we go from here?
Right. So it really is about perfectionism. What would somebody have to be or do to be worthy? And what often happens is we are giving grace, more grace to other people than to ourselves, that we're holding ourselves to a standard that we don't hold other people to. Or we are comparing ourselves to other people's performance. So, you know, I'll give by way of example, in the pandemic, some people on social media were like presenting that they were living their best life, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, then if you are comparing yourself to that, then it's like, oh my gosh, I'm so inadequate. All I did today was like barely get out of bed. So to be mindful of what we're comparing ourselves to, and also to say, I am not perfect, but even with my imperfections, imperfect people are deserving of respect. Imperfect people are deserving of care and connection. An imperfect person can still have a contribution to make. And so that eases it from this idea, because if I say, often I think worthiness, then people have to like kind of disrupt. Who do you think is worthy? What makes somebody worthy? Like, does my humanity come with a worthiness, right? I'm a human being. So does that, you know, mean I'm worthy of some things? And so to give myself that.
And then kind of piggybacking off of that, this idea of like authentic confidence, I think that is something people think you're going to all of a sudden wake up one day and be like, I want to go from not confident to confident. Mm-hmm. What are the ways that we can sort of maybe recontextualize this idea of confidence as like a checkbox instead of something that we're growing into?
That's right. So confidence develops over time. With the more I do something, the more confident I will be in it. And many of us have, as you're describing, this false notion of, I want to wait till I'm confident, or I want the magic formula to be confident, and then I'll just show up and be amazing. And so in mindfulness, the phrase is beginner's mind. Do I have the capacity to start even when I'm not an expert, even when I don't know fully how to do it? Can I start? And as I engage in it, the more I do it, the confidence will grow. So, you know, the example I gave in the book is when I first was as a graduate student, they would kind of be very selective about what clients they gave us, you know, because we were beginners. And so when I left for my internship and the first time I started being assigned clients who had more severe issues, you know, at first I was startled, like, are you sure? Like, did you mean to assign that client to me? And, you know, kind of try to figure out, like, what do I do? And the only way I now have confidence to do it is because I've done it several times, many, many times. And so when you feel that nervousness or that anxiety to not immediately quit, but, you know, you can ask for support, for guidance, for mentorship, for people to explain it again, or to see if you can shadow someone as you develop the skills.
First, thank you so much for this incredible conversation and for everything that you put out into the world, because it's so amazing and needed and necessary. And where can everyone find you and connect with you and read your books and continue to be encouraged to return to their self?
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciated the questions and am happy for your audience to stay connected. So my website is drtehma.com, and that's drtehma.com. My podcast is called Homecoming, and it's on major platforms. You can follow me on Twitter, on Instagram, and just as of 2 weeks ago, you can follow me on TikTok. And so right, I'm just joining that party. And on all of the platforms, I'm Dr. Tehma.
Amazing. And we'll have links for everything in the show notes as well as for your books as well. Thank you so much. This has been such a beautiful conversation.
Oh, thank you. All the best to you.
Thank you so much for tuning into the episode, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, we did. And in case you're not totally ready to join the pathway yet, I wanted to share a few of our free offerings that I'll often suggest to people as a little bit of a blueprint to get them started on their manifestation journey. The first place I like to direct people completely for free is The Motivation. You can see it linked below or on our homepage as our testimony library. And it's categorized by different subjects, whether you're calling in career, money, love, wellness, and much more. When you're reading about a member's experience of what they manifested, you're actually seeing to believe and showing your subconscious that that very thing is possible for you. The second place I like to direct people is to the free clarity exercise, which is also linked below. In it, you get to try our own unique hypnosis process, learn about the science, and some journaling prompts. And the best part about this, you'll get a tiny taste of what it's like to go into your hypnotic state, bring your subconscious forward, and create new neural pathways while receiving clarity. And the third thing, if you haven't listened to it on this podcast yet, please go back to the episode titled Manifestation 101, where you'll learn the basics of neural manifestation to truly understand this process. So go ahead and check out those free resources, The Motivation, the free clarity exercise, and the episode Manifestation 101, all linked below. And in an effort to make sure to have representation in this process series, go ahead and submit any process testimonials you have, especially to our LGBTQ+ community, our BIPOC, as well as the WISE, which is anyone in the community who is 45 and over. All right, we'll be back next week.